The next case, number 21-2002, GP versus Merrick B. Garland. Attorney Kim, please introduce yourself on the record to begin.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Sang Yeo Kim for petitioner. Judge Thompson,
good morning.
May I have 1 minute for rebuttal?
Just one, okay.
Thank you, Your Honor. Under the regulation, petitioner's testimony can serve as an independent source of evidence satisfying the burden. The regulation also requires the agency to consider all relevant evidence, including this testimony. Despite this clear law, the agency decision does not reflect that it did so. Despite claim that it considered all relevant evidence, despite the presumption that agency considered all relevant evidence. And then how do we know that the decision does not reflect that it did so? That arises from the agency's expert evidence assessment. So there are four reasons why the agency gave limited weight to the expert evidence to deny the CAT claim. And one of the reasons was the expert's failure to know the relationship between the leader of the organization, petitioner's trade, and a government official in petitioner's country. But that evidence was produced through petitioner's testimony. So it makes no sense how agency can give limited weight to the expert evidence to deny the CAT claim in its entirety when another independent source actually produces that evidence. The only credible explanation is that the agency did not consider or, at a minimum, overlooked petitioner's testimony. The second reason why agency gave limited weight to the expert evidence is that the expert did not have the personal knowledge of the organization petitioner betrayed. But it's unclear why expert needed to know that organization when petitioner already clearly testified about the capacity and all the details of this organization. An agency decision does not even meaningfully engage with petitioner's testimony. And if we look at petitioner's testimony, petitioner was not merely a fact witness, but petitioner also testified based on his personal knowledge and formed an opinion as a lay witness. And when he was asked why he would get retaliated, he already testified about based on his opinion how that retaliation happened. He also testified about contract killing, as well as the existence of the liaison between petitioner's country and the United States, and that's how this organization would find out about his whereabouts. And what nearly the expert really did is, assisting the fact finder to understand the context. And because petitioner testified about this connection between this local organization and international cartel, expert merely formed an opinion based on that connection.
So let me ask you, what you're suggesting is that the immigration judge and the board, what they're requiring is a standard for an expert that he provide factual conclusions rather than, you know, again, if this was in federal district court on the rules of evidence, he's got his expertise, he's qualified an expert, he may listen to the testimony, he can reach conclusions. But I think that's what you're saying, that they're requiring him to make factual conclusions rather than expert conclusions. Am I correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. So what agency did essentially here is treating the expert as a fact witness and not even considering the petitioner's testimony. And if you apply the rules of evidence,
But the rules of evidence don't apply in that proceeding.
Right, but it provides, yes, Your Honor, it's not binding.
And I believe that's sort of the argument that the amicus, the retired IOJs are suggesting, that the court should direct the agencies to implement some sort of standard for experts. Am I correct?
That's correct, but we agree with the BIA that they're requiring the agency to completely adopt the rules of evidence might be against the nature of the removal proceedings, because removal proceedings is somewhat loose, and depending on the context, the applicant may need to, it might be the benefits for applicants not actually go through the rules of evidence. But my point is, it still provides some guidance, and that's based on BIA's own case, what matter of JGT, matter of MAMZ, matter of DR. And so what matter of DR indicates, for example, is that expert can make inferences based on the sources without actually having the personal knowledge. And the problem here is that personal knowledge, that underlying fact, came from petitioner. So what the agency should have done was engaging with petitioner's testimony, and that's what petitioner contended before the BIA.
Counsel, I'm maybe you were going to get to this, but you're focusing on the petitioner's testimony, but the expert can rely on much more than that. As you say in your brief, he had access to DEA reports, to other reports. He interviewed fairly currently other deportees. He was given access with respect to at least one project that he was working on that was fairly recent. Why are you not mentioning any of this?
Yes, Your Honor, I was about to get in.
Okay.
We thought that this case has two problems. One is treating expert as a fact witness. So the agency's faulty reasoning is that not actually engaging with petitioner testimony. So that's one, because agency is blaming the expert for not actually having a sufficient factual basis, and that factual basis came from petitioner. So the agency's logical analysis has to include that petitioner testimony. But even putting that issue to the side, I think this case raises an important question of how to then assess the expert evidence, especially when the rules of evidence are not binding before the IJ. And at the outset, the IJ mentions that IJ has to give limited weight to that expert because expert's knowledge, connection, research are outdated. But IJ doesn't really explain, for example, what kind of standard or criteria that IJ was relying on. IJ is not an expert. IJ may have heard similar cases or cases involving the same country. Nonetheless, it doesn't change the fact that IJ is not an expert. IJ doesn't have the expertise, has not gone through the same training as the expert did. So
you're suggesting the IJ is putting his or her expert opinion above that of the expert? Based on his prior experience, that's what he's doing, am I correct?
It's unclear what the IJ actually did, because IJ does not actually explain. I want to really make an argument based on the agency's decision. IJ only mentions the fact that the expert visited the country, physically visited the country in 2014, and has conducted interview until 2019. But to say that, so I think there could be two ways for a reasonable fact finder to have some doubt, raise question about the accuracy, validity of the expert evidence. Number one is comparing that expert with the opposing expert, but which did not exist in this case. Second way, more a convenient way, would be pinpointing some evidence in the record that contradicts the expert evidence. So for example, if there's evidence issued after 2014, and that if that contradicts expert opinion, then obviously, logically, any reasonable fact finder could raise a question about the accuracy or recency of the expert's knowledge. But that did not happen.
And there's no such evidence in the record.
There's not.
Credibility to your client, credibility to the expert, but then it's not it's weighed, you know, against your client, correct?
That is correct. But to be fair, the agency asserted that the expert 2011 book, one chapter about the treatment of the criminal deportee, was relevant to the assessment of the expert's opinion with respect to petitioner's particularized claim. But just as a matter of logic, I'm still not sure why that is relevant. In 2011, the expert was not considering petitioner's very precise, particularized claim, and that was just apple versus orange. So, but the agency does not even explain. So even under the substantial evidence standard, that basis has to be reversed. I don't know whether this answers Your Honor's question, Judge Howard. Now, the agency has a backup position, which is the demanding or the lack of evidence that other government cooperators or witnesses were harmed. Now, putting aside the reasonableness of this demand, the agency did not even comply with the rule, which I call it Molina-Diaz rule. But it's not about Molina-Diaz of this court's case law.
Could you just flesh that out a little bit more? Because I didn't quite understand what the IJ was doing there. Was the IJ trying to suggest that your client had to, from prison, figure out where all the co-defendants were and what happened to them?
Yes, Judge Thompson. It seems like that's what IJ demanded, not at the hearing, but after the hearing. And what the problem of such demand, again, putting aside the reasonableness of this demand, is it just did not even comply with existing law. And I want to quote the footnote 5 of Matter of LAC, which is about BIA's own case law about this corroborating evidence. In footnote 5, which we cited in our reply brief, I believe page 16, is that the relevant events of the country of the nationality is the type of the corroborating evidence that triggers this requirement. And this requirement requires two things. One is give an opportunity to the applicant to explain why such evidence in question was not submitted. Number two, make an explicit finding as to whether such explanation is reasonable. None of that happened. But even assuming that at the cross-examination, the attorney for the Department of Homeland Security asked about the whereabouts of other government witnesses, and petitioner answered that he didn't really know about. Even assuming that answer is sufficient to satisfy the first prong on behalf of the IJ's own question, the second prong was not met. And what's more troubling about this case is the BIA's role. The fact that we have the BIA is that if there are errors IJ committed, then if those errors were raised by the applicant, the non-citizens, then BIA should address them if those questions are dispositive or important. But BIA decision is silent about those points. That's another ground for this court to vacate the relief. I want to go back and looking at all this evidence through somewhat our own common sense approach. So we have petitioner testimony, which provide all the predicate facts. He also formed an opinion as to what's going to happen, why is that going to happen, how it's going to happen. His testimony is pretty much very similar to expert evidence. Now, the only difference is the basis of those opinions. Now, expert came through, again, as Judge Howard mentioned, all these other resources based on his own research and formed an opinion based on the predicate fact. And petitioner's testimony came from his lived experience as part of this organization, who knows about this organization. On top of that, there's non-expert corroborating evidence, including the letter from the U.S. Attorney's Office, indicating how important his testimony was, including the pre-criminal defense affidavit, as well as other country condition evidence that conscious killing is a method for drug trafficking organization to settle the score. And there's no countering evidence. The Department of Homeland Security did not submit a single evidence countering petitioner testimony, other non-expert corroborating evidence, and expert evidence. And agencies still deny the likelihood of it. The oddity of this case is that usually the competing evidence, the question comes in at acquiescence, because a lot of times the applicant complains about that the government will not protect him, turn a blind eye to the possibility of torture, and then there is some evidence showing the government is doing some steps. But this is not even an acquiescence question. It's merely about whether there are substantial grounds to believe that there's a risk of torture. And no reasonable fact finder would agree with the agency in this case. I see that my time is, I still have 1 minute left, but this concludes my argument unless you don't have a question. But I acknowledge that I do have 1 minute rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Attorney Kim. At this time, Attorney Kelly, please introduce yourself on the record to begin.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court, I'm Richard Kelly for the government. Your Honors, petitioner has not provided compelling evidence or identified compelling evidence that would warrant the reversal of the agency's denial of CAT deferral, and I want to jump straight to some of the points brought up by the petitioner. Your Honor is correct that expert witnesses are not fact witnesses, but the problem in this case is, I guess for ease, I'll separate this into GP's testimony and the expert testimony. So I think that the agency correctly weighed the expert's testimony in that it accepted the fact that sort of the country conditions reflected that these criminal works, that some criminal groups do work with government officials. However, I think what the agency was doing here is it was looking at GP's testimony and it found it speculative. And I think if Your Honors really look at the transcripts, look through GP's testimony, it would see that as correct. Now, petitioner bears that he...
Okay, is there anywhere in the transcript that the IJ says it is speculative? Because, I think it was deemed credible.
Yes, Your Honor, it was credible, but the chain of events leading to his torture was speculative. That's on page 123, the first paragraph at the top there. It says here, the court cannot find that each link of respondent's hypothetical chain of events leading to his alleged harm at the hands of a private actor was more likely than not to occur. And he is cited to matter of MBA, saying that basically rejecting a claim based on assumptions or fears what would happen rather than providing evidence.
But that's the petitioner's testimony. But then you add the expert to that, and if combined, wasn't there an issue there?
No, Your Honor, because the issue was with the factual predicate. So I believe that this court should look to two cases, Romulus versus Ashcroft, also Bonnet versus Garland. And each of those cases, the court recognized that the expert testified as to part of the chain that the torture happened. So for example, in Romulus, the expert had testified that there was this group that groups can work with the government or have or be harmed by them. However, the petitioner didn't establish that the group was interested in harming him in the first place. Similarly, in Bonnet versus Garland, although the expert testified
I'm sorry, counsel. This guy was stabbed in prison, and those stabbing him said that they're doing so because of his testimony.
And he was isolated after it happened. The penal system recognized it was
Yes, Your Honor.
We know he was a target, and he was a target by the person who he testified against. And he was part of this long, violent organization and knew the living experience of someone familiar with how these kinds of organizations work, including retaliation.
Your Honor, with due respect, that wasn't part of the factual finding by the agency, specifically.
But that was part of his testimony.
And it's in the record.
It was part of his testimony.
However, the petitioner said he did not purport to know a definitive reason for the attack. And that's actually on page 217. There, he said that there were rumors in prison that he cooperated, but on page 216 to 217, he didn't definitively know if that was tied to Martinez.
Well, didn't he say they were making statements when they were stabbing him?
I don't believe he said that. But if Your Honor have a particular point in the record, I can address. But I guess this brings me to my second point. So even if he did establish that that one attack was at the behest of Martinez, it failed to inform his risk of torture in the Dominican Republic, because petitioner did not testify at all about the Martinez's current reach in the Dominican Republic. Now, remember, this is a man who is in prison for 45 years. He has GP testified that he did not ever see Martinez working with any officials in the Dominican Republic. He did not know of any ties to Dominican law enforcement. So there was really this gap in testimony about the ability of and the current operating status of the Martinez organization in the Dominican Republic. So while Your Honors are correct that the expert testimony did acknowledge that some criminal groups can work with government officials, he didn't establish the factual basis of that claim, and that Martinez's ability or continued interest to operate in the Dominican Republic. And similarly with the cartels, on page 187, the petitioner testified that he can't really quite say if there is a direct link between the cartels and the Martinez organization. The only thing he knew is that the drugs he supplied originated or came from the cartels. So I think what the agency was doing here was looking at this vague kind of testimony. There wasn't any other evidence in the record corroborating the fact that he could be subject to risk. And again, this is a high standard that the petitioner has to meet. He has to prove that he's more likely than not to be tortured. And correct, although the agency limited the weight of this testimony, I think the agency was looking at the fact that the expert couldn't really opine on the Martinez organization's reach in that country. Now, and I think the petitioner kind of insinuated that they don't really have to prove that. However, I think there are many gang cases that this court looks at. They look at, for example, MS-13 cases, things like that. I think that the agency was looking at the lack of evidence about how that organization, or even if it still operates in that country, because again, Martinez testified that there are about 20 people in this organization. 40 people were arrested in connection with, and that was in New England. He didn't even opine on the prevalence of that organization in the Dominican Republic, other than some of the people there had ties. And Martinez himself is a U.S. citizen.
But he's still Dominican. He's still got Dominican roots.
Right. Yeah. But that in itself is not enough to establish how if the organization even operates in that country.
Well, was he part of the drug organization that operated in part from the Dominican Republic?
The petitioner?
Yes.
So that's
how he was a co-defendant to give testimony.
Right, but it wasn't operating in the Dominican Republic. It was in Massachusetts or New Hampshire. So there was no evidence kind of establishing the operation of this group. Again, he met Martinez in the Dominican Republic, and I think Martinez brought him into the country. But again, there wasn't any testimony other than the fact that he met Martinez there through some...
But isn't that sufficient? Because if there's 40 people arrested here, that's a large number. There's definitely... And New Hampshire is a small state compared to the Dominican Republic, Mexico, these places. There's going to be more people around. It's a very reasonable inference. It's not like there's nobody else around. And they actually brought him here after he had been removed.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes. I mean, I don't think it's a compelling inference. They have to show that conclusion that the agency reached is not permissible. So even if Your Honors would kind of maybe see the evidence in a different light, he has established that there was no reasonable possibility that a reasonable fact finder could have allowed that conclusion. I think just because of the lack of any evidence showing the operation of that group in Dominican Republic, what evidence is there? He doesn't know. He apparently spent so much time with this organization. Where's the evidence of that group's reach? He was represented by counsel.
It had to have some reach because that's where he was recruited.
He didn't establish that that's where he was recruited.
You just told me that.
I said he met Marks. The record is very unclear, and I think this goes to my point. He was quibbling kind of with how he got involved in the organization. He wasn't forthcoming about any more information about his relationship with Martinez in the Dominican Republic. So presumably there was evidence that he couldn't. Yes, Your Honor can certainly infer some things. However, when we look to what he has to show, a compelling evidence, again, where is the compelling evidence that shows this group is still operating when its leader is in prison for 45 years? It's unclear if this is even still a viable organization. And that also goes to the weight of the expert testimony. The immigration judge has broad latitude how to interpret and weigh evidence, but I think that because Dr. Brotherton couldn't testify to the factual predicate of the claim, that evidence essentially...
But again, what you're saying is that then the expert is required to give factual testimony rather than expert testimony. Going to my experience in federal courts, experts are asked, these are the facts, what's your opinion? He can't testify or give factual opinions.
Yes, Your Honor, but the agency is titled to give weight. So the standard announced in JGT, so when the expert, this is the second step, after qualifying the expert, the IJ has to determine how much weight to give the expert. And the standard for that is whether the testimony is probative and persuasive on key issues in the case. The key issue here was what will happen, how will Martinez identify him, if he's still interested in him. Dr. Brotherton's testimony, although helpful on country conditions, could not speak to that. And I think that if the petitioner had filled that evidentiary gap, even with his own testimony on those issues, I think that would be a different story. But here we don't have any indication of the factual predicate underlying the claim.
Let me say this guy, GP, he's a big-time cooperator, and again, for a state of New Hampshire, I think, 40 defendants. That is, you know, a huge case. If you're talking Puerto Rico, maybe it's 200 defendants. But this there's a letter from the U.S. attorney. This gentleman cooperated beyond cavil. That's not an issue. But it you know, we're not talking about somebody who perhaps, you know, talked a little bit here and there. Nobody, there wasn't a trial. Nobody got convicted. But then he's speculated or afraid. This is somebody who, in fact, cooperated. He goes to prison. They try to kill him. There are again, you mentioned the word compelling inferences that can be made. And I think that this may be one of these cases where an inference to the other, otherwise may not be, you know, based on substantial evidence. So that's, I don't know if you want to address that a little bit.
Yes, I mean, I would counter that it's also compelling for the agency's point of view, where this organization whose leader is incarcerated, all the members appear to be incarcerated or in prison. How would they still be interested in harming him? What ability, more importantly, he didn't give any, again, there's no evidence as to the reach of this organization. So even if
the drug conspiracy has been put out of business because these people have been incarcerated at this point, that doesn't mean that there's not a conspiracy still going on, or that they're not, or it hasn't shifted now to just simple retaliation against testifying people.
Right. Yes, but there's no evidence of that.
Except that he was stabbed.
I mean, if you want to point that into, but that doesn't form his risk of torture in the Dominican Republic. So his family has never been harmed, as the agency noted. Correct, that might support an inference, but again, he has to show compelling evidence. And I'm running low on time. I just want to address one last point, that this is not a corroboration case. So the petitioners brought up Elena Diaz versus Wilkinson, several other cases. The agency here did not cite the corroboration statute. Corroboration cases, the agency will say, we're denying it for failure to produce reasonably available evidence. Similarly situated individuals is always a relevant factor, especially even in this course's asylum cases. They know if there are similarly situated individuals, such as family members who remain unharmed. I think
how should he reasonably be expected to know what happened to the other co-conspirators?
Well, aside from, I mean, he had kind of contact with these organizations, but that's not the issue. The issue isn't whether he was reasonably expected to know. This is a sufficiency of the evidence case. So if there's no evidence that anyone in the Dominican Republic was ever harmed due to Martinez, I think that's a relevant factor in consideration whether he's going to be tortured.
But how would he know that?
How would he know?
Yes. How could he reasonably be expected to know that?
Oh, what would happen to the...
No,
well, but that wasn't a finding. So he said, I don't know what happened to them. So I think he explained
That was held against him, that he didn't know what happened to the other people.
Well, Your Honor, if you say that someone in the Martinez organization is going to torture you, obviously whether there's any harm that the person identified is relevant. And he didn't say that there wasn't any harm. He didn't say either way. So I think just noting that, and the agency says that they're noting that, it wasn't a dispositive inquiry. But I think that's definitely relevant evidence, and he had counsel the ACLU for his removal proceedings. I think they could answer that question more definitively in front of the IJ. So I see I'm out of time. And I will rest on the remaining arguments in our brief, and the court should deny the petition for review.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Attorney Kelly. At this time, Attorney Kim, please reintroduce yourself on the record for your one-minute rebuttal.
May it please the court, Seng Yeop Kim for petitioner. Your Honor, I believe most of the government's argument will address through our brief, but I want to point out the factor there. The first one, about the stabbing attack, whether there's any connection with respect to these attackers and the organization petitioner betrayed. Now, these two individuals were transferred to the same detention facility. They knew what petitioner did. They even knew petitioner's nickname, which is record 215. The only explanation is that they were ordered by this organization. Number two, my brother indicated that petitioner did not testify about this relationship between the leader of the organization and government official. He did. Record 236. Now, my brother also indicated that these suppliers were not from the Dominican Republic. That's incorrect. Record 187. My brother also indicated that the entire orbiter has been dismantled. It is not. According to DEA, there are four fugitives, and AGIS does not even talk about this international record. So we asked the court to grant this petition, neither reverse the case or vacate the BI decision at a minimum.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. This session.